When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, it's pretty derelict, as is, you know. I mean, all the foundations are there, all right, but the buildings are gone. It was officially opened by the Taoiseach of the day, Sean Lemess, on the 22nd of October 1965. And employment in Irish base metals itself would probably have averaged about 350 to 400 over its 15-year span. It closed in 1981, and the majority, everybody was let go at that stage. And then there was a stockpile of silver ore, which was processed later on, and about 35 or 40 people came back and done that. And it finally closed in December 1982. It was regarded at the time as the largest producer of zinc in Europe. Of course, we'd say it made a great contribution, we'd say, to the local economy, in the sense that back in the mid-60s, we'd say, things wouldn't, you know, have been very good economically in the area. So it was a terrific boost to have approximately 300 to 400 people working there. So it injected a lot of money into the local area. It was farmland, so we'll say when the ore was discovered back in the late 50s, early 60s, when the ore body was discovered, the company bought that land off of local landowners and developed it. Basically, all you see is the stone, you know. It's all nearly stone-coloured, you know, chippings and that kind of thing. They would have been part of the process. You know, we'll say when the rock was taken from underground, it was crushed, and a lot of it, once the metals had been extracted, a lot of it was used in road making and that. So that's what gives it its particular colour today. What we're looking at here now through the perimeter fence is what was the open cast mine. At the moment, as you can see, it's filled almost up to the banks with water. It's about half a mile long, about a quarter of a mile wide, and at its deepest point, it's approximately 340 feet deep. Millions of tons of ore was taken out of that, the open cast, and when that was exhausted, then it went underground.
And some fog as well, and the vapour off the drills. The drills were driven with air and water. Air and water, you were. And there'd be vapour, a fog off the drills. So you'd be working in a fog and darkness, but you'd have the light, your helmet light. That's the only light you had. But you get used to the darkness. It was awful night off the drill, like Your ear muffs on, you'd hear nothing. You'd hear the noise all right, but you wouldn't see no one coming out to you very seldom, except a shift boss would call once a day, maybe twice a day to you. You know, and you'd be drilling away there. You'd be on bonus and you'd try and drill as much as you could and get out. That's the way it was. It was lonely, all right, you know, going down at night at 7 o'clock in the evening. It wasn't too nice sometimes, but sometimes, you know, you wouldn't feel like. But you do it after a snow remarks and go down and do it. Summertime when the sun is shining, you'd have a glare of the sun, it'd be cutting days out of you when you come up. But the darkness, just going out into the darkness, it was the same again then. So.
At the very bottom of the piece, I can think of the Chimana vein of ore, and I suppose to be what you call silver orta. And it was so pure in it that they loaded it on the trucks and brought it direct to Galway without ever having to go through the mill or go through the crusher. That went to the boat direct, and that's how valuable that mine was.
Just high risk, all high risk stuff. Some of the tunnelling involved maybe drilling holes at a vertical of about maybe 60 degrees upwards. And once you blasted that, you'd go back up in there and see that it all had cleared and that there was no explosives left in any of the holes that were drilled, plus the risk of maybe some loose rock coming down. So there was no time from any morning you went down into that underground mine. Your life was at risk. There was no doubt about that. And I think maybe our Angel Guardians were on overtime at the time.
Well, I started in 1968, and that particular time they opened, I worked in the open pit and had fairly well developed at that time. It was a welcome guest in the area of, we'll say, Tigna, Loughrea, Portumna, because farming was on its knees at the time, and there was very little, there was no jobs other than that around East Galway. And I suppose a lot of the people that worked on it, a lot of the locals that worked on it, wouldn't be around today were it not for the mine. And I give them a great start, and I give a lot of the small farmers that worked in it, I give them a great start to build themselves up. But the mine itself, I suppose, it was a good place to work. Maybe today you wouldn't get the people to do what we're doing at that particular time, because the going was tough, and there'd be a lot of manual work that time in the line of laying pipes and one thing and another, for taking water and pumping out water, and you had all of this, and it was all manual. There was no machines.
Most people were on bonuses.
Yeah.
Our flat week, I don't know what our flat week's wage was at the time, later years about £80, and you make a bonus of 80 more. You had to work hard to do that, but everyone was on bonus. So, lucky there wasn't more killed in it, because everyone was rushing. You know, you try to make the big money and the bonus. So, we were lucky. We were very lucky. That it closed and there wasn't too many killed in it. Yeah, you were supposed to scale down the tunnels and, you know, scale down before you work and make sure there was no loose rock and all that. So you do a certain amount of it, but you wouldn't do it. You'd do it nearly every day, but you wouldn't do a right job on it. You'd be in a hurry to get on, to move on, to drill off the headings and get them blessed and get them out. That's where you made the money. So there was a bit of that. It was a bed. It wasn't a great way, I suppose.
Well, it was a good system for the company, as they were getting the return.
But
it was a bad system for the workers.
Yeah.
Because you were taking awful chances.
Yeah.
And that time, there was no rules and regulations at that particular time, like what you have today. You know, there's no way to operate today.
You go down with your lunch in the morning and you'd eat where you're drilling. You wouldn't be wasting time coming up to the canteen to eat. You'd eat your lunch down where you're working on the rock, and it wasn't that nice, but you get used to it. It wasn't too bad either, you know.
But just surprising, like, you know, when you're green to everything, like, you know, because I never, you know, until the mine did come, like, I never worked in a job before, you see, and I had no experience, like, and there was an awful lot of working there as well as me, the same way, like, you know. And fellas that came home from England now and that were in other jobs and all that, like, they had they were great, like, because they had the experience, you see, and they knew, you know. And I even think of myself now, there was a fella there with me, like, and he'd leave his coat about, well, it would be off over a good bit anyway, like, you know, and he'd walk over for his shovel, like, and he'd get the coat, like, and he'd get a cigarette, like, and it'd take him as long, like, and I used to think the day is long, like, you know, when I started that work first, like, and to try to put down the time, and I used to think it terrible, like, and our job now there for a while was with two shovels and this load, big loads of gravel had come, you see, and if there was a few big stones, all you'd have to do was just put, get the big stone and walk over and just throw it out over the verge, like, you know. Well, your men was as happy as that, like, you know. And I used to think the day was as long as a week, you know. But it was just that he was used to working, and that's what was wrong, you see. And he was used to working in jobs and that, like, and really time, and there was a big difference, like, you know. But I thought if I could work like hell, you know, the day would go a lot faster for me and that, you know, and I was used to that, like, and... But I got used to it myself after a while anyway, and everything takes time, you know. Be degrees anyway, we got it going fairly good, and another thing too, like, you see, that we were learning as well, and it isn't easy, like, you know, people that was never used to machinery or anything, like, you know, because I was only young now at the time, like, and I never even knew what an automatic electric pump was, you know. And I remember after I started first, and the fella that was over me, he put me hose in one night, and this pump went behind me, you know, and I couldn't know who started it, you know. And I was looking all round, and I could see no one, and the next thing it stopped again. And I was looking again, it went again after a while, you see, and I never realised at all that it was I that was causing it to go with the hose into the water, like, you know. And at the time, like, we didn't have any electricity ourselves at home, you know, here, and I hadn't a clue. And they buy an automatic one. I didn't even know, I'd just about know how to turn on the right one, you know. So I seen a lot of changes, like, since that, you know. We had no electric light or anything at home at the time, like, and I seen all them changes, like, you know. And it is great, really, like, the way all them changes came anyway. Now, if there's any kind of strike or anything wrong with the light, like, it's so hard to do without it, you know. You think it's terrible, even if you had to do one or two nights, you know. But I suppose it's just that when we got used to it, you know.
I suppose the wage system, again, was something very new. A lot of people would have been used to, I suppose, prior to that. I suppose, I don't know what the average industrial wage at the time is. I wasn't be around in the early days. I joined the mine in 1969, so it was probably running maybe 8 or 9 years at the time. And I know when I started there, I was getting £28 a week. That was my gross. I thought I was in heaven. But mind you, I left school, stupidly enough, I still say stupidly enough, I left school after Intercert because it was down the road for me. And I think that was the case with a lot of fellas of my age, you know, that we kind of, well, maybe there wasn't a culture of education around at the time either, you know, that the idea was wherever the good money was, go here, because it looked like being a lifetime operation at the time. You know, this was 1969. Everyone figured, well, here's a job for life. But it didn't work out like that. And I suppose partly the reason it didn't work out like that is we weren't used to industry. We weren't cute enough, either as a workforce or our government of the day weren't cute enough, because the way the whole thing was managed, both from an environmental point of view, from a safe health and safety point of view, was an absolute disaster. You know, I know everybody at the time did their best, but the risks that were taken, the hazards that people were exposed to, in today's world, which is a long time past, you're talking of 30 years, it would not be tolerated in any form or shape. People walked, I know, even in the mill, in the processing plant, people walked in the mill where you were using quite an amount of highly toxic chemicals, like you had cyanide, you had a lot of other additives that were in the flotation process. Now, cyanide by nature, anyone who knows anything about cyanide, is absolutely one of the most lethal reagents known to man. And yet now there was a very significant quantity of that used in the process on a daily basis. And that the tailings that went out into a pond, you know, do we know the level of pollution that this has caused? The other part of the legacy, I suppose, maybe from a downside as well, is the way the whole landscape has been left. There was no control or no plan in place to say, how do we leave this site when we're finished? That, I think, was a shame and a disgrace to be allowed. You know, you only look at Tara Mines today and you drive by Tara Mines and you see the way that's environmentally controlled. You wouldn't think there was a mine at all there. You know, the landscape, the level of landscape, and it's superb. You know, that was the environmental side of it. A lot of people lost their health, you know, going to bad health as a result of it, because there wasn't health and safety procedures there at the time. You know, okay, those programs tried to implement, you know, people wear safety glasses, wear hearing aids. But I mean, the dust, the level of dust and the type of dust we were inhaling, you had a high content of lead in the process. You had a lot of diesel fumes, you had a lot of those acids and reagents being treated. People were exposed to that, and I suppose at the time, we weren't clever enough to know the difference. And as a man said to me at one time, there's no air any good for you, only fresh air. We were all young, we didn't know the difference. So I think it has certainly left its legacy from that point of view on a lot of us. And if you want to look at the good side of it, I think certainly provided a huge, you know, there was at a time when there was maybe over 300, 350 people directly employed there. That was a fantastic boost to the area.
That was good, there's no doubt about it. You give as good as you got. You could expect anything, but there was no ill will amongst anyone, you know. There was, you know, you had the crack, and I suppose that's why it was so good a place to work. So if everyone was going the one way, and even when you'd be in the canteen, you could expect anything. You could expect when you'd sit down, you could expect a hot tea bag to be put under your, open your lunchbox. You know what you'd find, a young rabbit in your lunchbox. Mm. And that was the carry on. And the same thing, I suppose, there was a great give and take then, I suppose. That's what made it a good place to work. Especially, well, I know in the pit anyway, in the farming, where people that was farming as well, part-time farming and working, you know, you might be expecting a county calf or something like that, and you'd say you wanted to just slip home for a half an hour just to give a look. Well, whoever was working alongside, you'd make sure that, you know, he carried the weight for you while you were gone to make sure there was no lapse. And that went on wholesale. And then on the other hand, if you were on day shift and maybe you wanted to go to a mart or go somewhere, you could swap a shift with your opposite number that would be coming in afternoons, and vice versa again. That, you know, and the company never passed any remarks on that. Once the shift were covered, it was never questioned.
I remember one, it was fierce funny. I was in at the doctor's in Loughrea, and there was coursing going on, and she had a date here, and she gave me the here, and she said, you might get rid of that fella for me somewhere, like, you know. So I said I would, and I just thought of it. They thought there was a fairy here around the mine at the time, you know. But I think what was wrong is that it was the lights that was dazzling them, you know. And there was this fairy here used to go into the crush, like, where all the noise was, like, you know, and that's why they thought he wasn't right, you know. And there was a fella working on the crusher, and he used to have to come down in the middle of the night to where we were to see how much ore was in the beans, like whether they were half full or three quarters full or what. So, but didn't I bring up the hair anyway, and we brought him up the stairs, and we put him sitting down above between, just where he'd be coming in the door, and we stuck his feet down. There's, you know, there was holes in the flooring, the siding flooring with holes in it, and we put him sitting up the grandest of you've seen. So I said to the lads, now, says I, when he comes in, he's sure to come down the stairs with fright, like, when he comes in the door overhead. And I said, as soon as he comes down, let your bonnie slip up and have him gone to here, you know. And Paddy Riley, God rest him, he's dead since anyway. When Paddy seen him coming down the stairs, he was coming down, he was as white as a ghost, you know. And he was hardly able to talk. And when Paddy seen him coming, Paddy slipped up and he brought the hair out of overhead. And, Lord, let's, he says, would you come up and you see what I seen up here? And he says, I don't know, but he says, I nearly fainted. He said, you shouldn't hear above sitting down. He said, it's the bins, you know. So up we go, all wondering, no hair. So he wouldn't come down at night to look at the bins again, no matter what we done, like, you know.
A lot of the people that came into the underground mine, there were people who worked maybe in, a lot of them worked in South Africa, what was known as the Copper Belt at the time. You had some people who worked in Canada. You had other mines in Ireland at the time. You had Keel in Longford. You had Avoca in Wicklow. And you had silver mines in Tipperary. People who had experience came to Tina. I suppose maybe the conditions at Tina were, even though we now look back on them, they were probably the better ones at the time. And a lot of various types of characters. And maybe one of the things I remember, maybe a funny incident, we had these Swedish contractors who were in, they were installing some steam work in the main, this was the development phase of the underground mine at the time. But this particular character, he was a non-national, he had very little English, and he lived in Galway. He met up with this girl who was Irish. She spoke English, she didn't speak his native language. But he arrived into work one particular morning, and he was in a very bad state, very sad in himself. He had got locked out the previous night. His new wife, as he called her, was gone. His car was gone and his money was gone. And he had a little bag with three cans of beer in it. And he said, well, I'm going to have to find myself a new car, new money and a new wife. I suppose at the time, for an industry, and for in an area that where industry was new, there was a very active sports and social club in the mine, you know, and a lot of competitions were entered in, particularly the being a hurling area, hurling being a great tradition in the area. We had a hurling team there at the time, and at one stage I think won an All-Ireland Interfirms title. There was also Gaelic football, a rugby team, various other competitions, you know, which was lent to the whole social aspect of the industry, which again I suppose is something we maybe tend to forget about when an industry closes down. That's a side of it that closes as well. You have the social aspect of an industry where people, they're a little community, you know, those 300 people were a mini community, and they interacted with each other through either through sport or through work or through weekends in the local hostelries, whatever it was. That goes as well, and those are the things that a rural community needs badly. The social life at the time, I suppose, started on Thursday night and continued until it included, at that time it included Sunday nights. There was, you know, there was local marquees. There was, at the time in Portumna, you had the West Park Hotel, and they used to have a type of a Saturday night dance there. The pubs in Loughrea, there was one particular pub in Loughrea where most of the young lads used to go. You're talking of maybe 18 to 24, 25 age group used to go. And at 8 o'clock in the evening, this particular publican would have, the counter was probably about 3 metres long. He'd have a double row of pints of Guinness started for 8 o'clock. He knew this crowd were coming in, and this was the scene from Thursday night right through, including Sunday night. You know, probably one of the businesses, unfortunately, there were probably the few of the businesses that did best out of the whole industry, you know, that's the social side of it. The dances, again, you know, you couldn't go anywhere within the county, but you met a huge percentage of the people you worked with, you know, and I suppose that the social life carried on outside of the mine, into the pubs, into the dance halls, into the, again, I suppose dinner dances were a big thing at the time, and the local GA clubs would all, that was the dinner dance was the in thing to go to. You know, you'd have the local parishes, Mullia, Tina, Kilimer, you had Abbey Denary, whoever else was having their dinner dance. Everybody went to the dinner dances. You know, the thing was to get tickets and go to the dinner dances, and it was, I suppose, another aspect of the social life at the time.
Traditional music was very strong in the areas around Tina, Ballinakeel, Knockery, and Portumna and Kilimer. In those areas, there was nearly every second house had to play some instrument, and there was a lot of sessions at the time as well. And in the mines, there was an awful lot of people that played music. Fiddles, flutes, accordions, and lots of people that sang as well. So it was no wonder then that there were so many people that worked in the mines that played session music and played in the weekends. And at that time, people went out and danced that time, and that was the time that music was really live in Ireland. And you had the dance halls going and you had the show bands, and that was the time that people, young and old, enjoyed themselves and went out and danced and had a good time. It was the time of the start and the singing pubs, and nearly every town had music. And what would happen then is the music would finish up around 11:30, and then you might go to a dance afterwards, and that start maybe from 12 o'clock till 2 o'clock, and that was fairly common. And then every parish had a marquee around them times as well, and they'd come for a fortnight, and one parish would have it for one fortnight, and then to move on to the next. This was in the summertime when people would go out and enjoy themselves and go dancing, and that went on for many years, where it kind of slackened off then with the discos came in. But that time there was no, it was all live music, so like everyone went out and danced, and you had the traditional Cayley bands doing the traditional music, and then you had the show bands. But at the time we played a mixture of everything, which kind of suited the different areas around it. Even up around Clare, you could have traditional music and you could have the singing as well, and so that caught on, and to this day it's still going. Like,
this originally was the Gate Man's Hut, and that building also contains the personnel department and the medical centre. That would be that. Here on our right is the main office. That's where you had all the offices and the administrative centre, if you like. It was a fabulous building. It was a state-of-the-art building, I suppose, at its time. But as you can see now, it's pretty derelict. That was the main office. We used to refer to that as the main office. You had the manager and the assistant manager and the accountants and the various other people that had make up the running of any company. That was their building here. As you can see, it's pretty run down now at the moment, but you can see they've had this crunching of glass as we enter. Well, it's pretty derelict looking. I mean, the floor is strewn with papers, and the glass and the windows is broken, and the ceiling is gone. And you know, I mean, all the buildings are virtually gone. There was a building there now, I would say, which would be over 100 feet high, that we're just looking over at the foundation of it now. That would be over 100 feet high. You had a long conveyor coming from another building where the ore was crushed. And, you know, there was loading, ore loading facilities down there at the back, and there was a drying plant. There was a crushing plant. Further over there, to the southeast, would have been the head frame, we'll say, where the material was taken from the underground. That would have probably been about, I suppose, 100, 150 feet high, with, you know, this typical big wheel that you'd see on the top for taking up the ore. And that would be part of the scene. You had a huge pile of chips there, which would be a byproduct of the crushing procedure. That's all gone now. You had water storage tanks and ore storage tanks over there. You had the crushing plant. You had a DMS plant. And, you know, they're all taken away. They were basically constructed of steel. And that was just taken away. Scrap people came and took that away. Maybe something, some industry or something might be located here, because it is ideally situated, ideal for industry in the sense like this, you know, this, it has a good electricity supply and that. And I think that if you've got a suitable type of industry, I mean, wouldn't be talking about a clean industry, one wouldn't wish to see anything coming in, we'll say, that would have a polluting effect or damaging to the environment or anything. But if one could get a few good clean industries, it would be very welcome.
There was a good few strikes out there now as well, and I was involved in the union for, I was chairman of the union there for 7 years, and it was a hard job enough too, like, you know, because there was underground and the peace and the mill. Those three different departments, like, you know, and if there wasn't something wrong in one place, to be wrong somewhere else, like, you know. And the lorry drivers in as well, the lorry drivers always seemed to have a bit of trouble, but when they finished in, they paid off the lorry drivers and hired private men there. Joe Nestor, he took over, so he it was he that brought all the ore on to finish up. And it seemed I remember one day I went in and there was a strike on, and the personnel manager said to me, would I come up with something good that had stopped strikes? And I'd said it'd be a good idea when the people come into work, like, you know, if the shift boss asked them how was things at home, you know. Because I said when a person comes into work in the morning, or, you know, you don't know what they're after leaving, like, there could be something wrong at home. And he said, a great idea. So the fella that was over me gave out to me anyway. He thought it was terrible, like, to have to go out to the lads and say how was things at home, you know. And some of them was making up excuses, you know. And there was nothing at all wrong at home. One fella wanted to go to the mart one day, and he told him, like, you know, that there was someone sick at home. There was no one sick at all, like, and he was went to the mart. And, but, like, you know, these skins can be abused too, like, you know. But it was a good idea, right? Like, it did work fairly well, like, you know, because it's surprising, you know, you never know, like, what kind of trouble a person could be after leaving in the morning, like, something wrong at home, and a shift boss could just say some little thing that may be wrong and to flare up, you know, very quick. So it was a great idea. Now he thought anyway that it worked great for a while anyway.
One of the unfortunate sides of mining, mining by nature, is that you have a lot of tragedies, accidents and serious accidents and fatalities. And in Tina, there certainly were, I think was in total 6 directly related to the industry in the period of the mine. There was 4 people killed in the underground operation. 2 of those were with contracting firms. One of them was non-national. The others were with a contracting firm, and 2 of them were 2 local guys. And those are the downside, the sad side, when you see one of your colleagues, you know, that they're not going to be going to work anymore. Those are memories that live with you, and certainly they're the ones that would make you want to say, well, I would not like to go back into the mining industry again. It was absolutely, you know, total shock to people, because when somebody, one of their colleagues and one of your colleagues is killed on site, particularly on site, and you know that the operation is going to continue on the next Monday or the next Friday or whatever, that you're going down working with that particular individual was killed, is not, and particularly down in an underground mine, by nature a mine is dark, it's damp, it's, you know, lighting is artificial, it's not easy to go back into an area where somebody, and I don't know for what reason, but you get that eerie feeling when you go back into a mine, particularly where someone was lost their life. Maybe it's the same with a road accident. If you know, if you come on a road accident and you're passed by that spot again, or somebody was killed, you know, it's not. It jogs the memory, certainly. The guys being local, you know, and it's, you know, their families still live in the community locally, and you know they had to carry on without their, I suppose, one of the breadwinners of the house at the time, and that couldn't have been easy, apart from the shock of losing a loved one.
When the mine closed that time, I think if I went on, I was one of the people that went on a deputation up to the then minister, Desi O'Malley, to see to, you know, that an industry would have been brought back into, because it's a fine site and it's a sin to have it left idle. And he said that time, you know, actually as much as told the war in the middle of nowhere, you know, that we didn't matter. You had to be in Galway City or Limerick or somewhere at that time to bring an industry into it. But it's lying there now for the past 20 years and nothing. I suppose the sad part about it was at the time that there was a lot of new houses built, and they were built in Knockray, where they should have been built in Tina. If they were built in Tina, they would have to put an industry into it. But that didn't happen, and the houses were built in Loughrea, and the people, any industry that came then, it came into Loughrea, and Tina was forgotten about. But all the locals in them all built new houses and got married, and you know, they stayed locally and they're still local. But then you're struggling now again. We're back to where we were in the 60s again, 70s, as regards to small farm. You're struggling again. There's nothing there to help. People were going out the gate and they didn't realise it was closing. You know, it was quite a fear at that time. It was now there'd be a big hullabaloo about it, you know, and that all the jobs were lost, like 300 jobs. That time was an awful lot of jobs were to be lost, and they were lost. But it was a very quiet shut down, and there was nothing, not a word about it, and people went their own ways then. Some, you know, people that had been travelling from a distance, maybe some of them up from Mayo or Limerick, they went back to their own destinations, and the more of them then, they were living in Loughrea, the secure jobs and a couple of factories in Loughrea, and more of them then set up their own little industry, you know, fitters and this, that and other. They set up their own little workshops, and they made a go of it, you know, and kept going, but it was an awful loss.
To have parties and that, you know, and we used to have some of the local musicians as well, Jimmy Hines at the Bend there now, and I used to sing a couple of songs now and again as well with them, and Paddy Haverty used to have a band at the time too, and so we used to have great old nights out that time and great parties and that, and I had one very old song, and I used to hear my father sing it, actually, that's 50 years ago now, so a lot of people don't even know the song, like, you know, and I don't know it all either, but I'll just sing a bit of it. It was called the frog in the garden. Oh, come listen a while with attention, and I'll sing you a verse of a song concerning a couple got married. I don't mean to delay you too long. Sure, they lived in the height of contentment, until then sure a row did occur, and the delf on my head she did splinter, saying, what did I marry you for? So I like a frog in the garden, don't step till you do look all round, and if you get a wife such as I've got, and your courage will surely pull down. The other day I came home to my dinner. Oh, what do you think, did I?
Since the mine now is closed, I suppose, just over 20 years now, a lot of people that worked there, some fine men, they've all passed away, and some young people as well. It's hard to believe that so many of them that worked there just 20 years ago are passed on. And then there's a lot of the people that work there that you mightn't see as often as you would like to see, because we had some great friendships. Now, through the music, all right, when I would be playing, maybe in different areas, you might meet up with them and you'd have the chat about the times we worked together in Tina Mines. And it's lovely to go back and reminisce and talk about what we'd done in them times. But there's a lot of people that you never see again, you know, that they're gone their different ways. But still, it's nice to meet the same people again that you worked with and chatted with, and maybe even played music with in the good old days.
So I like a frog in the garden, don't step till you do look all round, and if you get a wife such as I've got, and your courage will surely pull down.
Oh.